Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Thames and me, Phil Nicol. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Yes. Welcome to Songs in the Key of Laugh, Series 3, Episode 3.
Woo-hoo!
Episode 2 was the last one.
It was.
It was the one before Episode 3.
Really good use of maths there, Phil. Lovely.
That is David Thames.
And that is Phil Nicol.
And last week we had on the wonderful musician, comedy musician, Amy Weber.
What a voice.
What a voice.
What a voice she has. Very funny.
Just naturally funny woman. If you didn't hear last week's episode, go back and listen to it. It's worth the fun.
On this week's show, we are going to be discussing lyrics.
Comedy lyrics. I mean, it's kind of the key to most comedy songs. There are comedy instrumentals.
There are,
I think. Are they? The popcorn. Doop, 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 doop.
Doop, 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 doop.
That's a comedy song. It's called Popcorn.
I mean, yeah, that's just a funny name.
But we're not discussing instrumentals this week, David. We're discussing lyrics. Tricky lyrics. We're talking about Cole Porter, Groucho Marx, Frank Zappa. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. We're going to try and figure out what we think our best favorite comedy lyrics are, maybe sing you a couple of songs. We're also going to be going to our comedy song contest. Our new submission this week is phenomenal. You're going to love this comedy song contest submission.
It is a competition.
Yeah.
And we are also going to be doing our Dictionary Nativity.
Ooh,
yes. Episode 3 of that. I wonder what happens.
And then a real quick chat with our guest, Pat Cahill. That was 2012 when you had the majority of your success.
Unfortunately true. Musically as well, I was in a band called Shooting Craps out in the Fens. We used to...
I'm sorry,
wait a minute, was the band called Shooting Craps or Shooting Craps Out in the Fens?
It would be better if it was called Shooting Craps Out in the Fens. It's called Shooting Craps.
Okay,
like,
out in the Fens.
Out in the Fens. I still think we were brilliant. I listened to an old CD recently, and we had a song called Gorilla, which went Gorilla.
Okay, so is Shooting Craps available on Spotify?
No, it's not.
Why isn't it?
It was back in the day where you burnt CDs and gave them out after gigs.
But it doesn't take much to load it up. When you think about comedy lyrics, you have to go all the way back. I mean, all the way back to ancient Greece, like 400 BC.
The last time that we spoke about ancient Greece, we just mentioned about the people walking around with penises.
Phalluses. Yeah. Well, that's it, because it's the song, the phallic song from... Stop it, David. It's from the Lysistrata. It's one of the first examples of men being silly about their willies. And it's a funny... And it's sung by a chorus of people... And I think that has sort of imbued, but Aristophanes is one of the great writers. I think he's renowned, you know, renowned. He's famous.
I mean, obviously,
we're still talking about him. And some of the pieces in that play, some of the songs in the play are absolutely phenomenal. But we were going to talk more about up-to-date, more being like last century and this century.
Yeah, we're less about people's pieces, more about their lyrics. So the first person that came to mind when we started talking about this was Cole Porter.
Oh, nice.
Now, I can't think of anybody that pulls together lyrics in such a... in such an interesting way.
Yes.
He has so many random points. Like for example, in Anything Goes.
Yes.
He talks about people playing tennis. He talks about poets writing in different ways. He uses so many different themes in such a short amount of time and yet threads them all together. I cannot imagine what it would have been like to be in his head.
Yes, he does. It seems to do a lot of lists, like in the song You're the Top. You're the Colosseum, you're the Louvre Museum, you're Bendel Bonnet, you're Mickey Mouse, you're the Nile Tower Pizza. I mean, it's sort of like almost a list of things, which are that he got the concept, you're the top, and then he just goes through this list of things, and it's just exceptional.
It's so good. I love it. I'm going to be playing one of his songs later on, actually.
He rhymes Mahatma Gandhi with Napoleon Brandy.
You're the top. You're Mahatma Gandhi, you're the top, you're Napoleon Brandy, you're the purple light of a summer night in Spain, you're the National Gallery, your gobble salary, your cellophane, you're sublime, you're a turkey dinner, you're the time of the Derby winner. I'm a toy balloon that's fated soon to pop. But if, baby, I'm the bottom, you're the top. You're the top.
So as well as all the great comedy songs, and I mean, you know, everything from the Flight of the Conchords, the Hip Hop Eponymous versus the Rhinoceros.
Yeah, and the Rhinoceros. Not because I'm fat, not because I got birds on my back, but because I'm horny. I'm horny!
Yeah.
Tune.
It is a good one. But you've also got like Bo Burnham's Welcome to the Internet. And then you've got all the older stuff. You've got Noel Coward, Mad Dogs and Englishmen. You've got all these great things. But there's an area where pop music kind of almost touches comedy music.
Absolutely.
Like the Magnetic Fields. Stephen Merritt wrote Papa was a rodeo, Mama was a rock and roll band.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic song, but my favorite one of that ilk is by a band called the Bare Naked Ladies. They're friends of mine. It's the Bare Naked Ladies, and this is their song Yoko Ono.
And if there's someone you can't live without, then do so. And if there's someone you can just shove out, we'll do so. You can be my Yoko Ono. You can follow me wherever I go. Be my Yoko Ono.
I love that song.
Yeah, well, I was actually around when they wrote the song because they were, Ed and Steve supported Cork the Juice Pigs on tour, on a cross-country tour, and the whole first album came out of writing songs in our van with us as we went across the country. That song and If I Had $1 Million.
Really? Mm-hmm. So you were there?
I was there. I wasn't there when they wrote it, but I was there around the time. We probably would have been some of the first people they played it to.
Ooh.
I know. Aren't I great?
You're very good. Now, I went to have a look around and see if I could find some of the, like, really, really big hits, okay, but with ridiculous lyrics.
Okay.
Okay,
like
so, well, I thought if we went really, really simple, we could go with something like Barbie Girl.
Yeah.
Right? It's a completely and utterly ridiculous song. It's like novelty, pop, but
sure.
It did extremely well.
Yep. Zigga Zigga Zag.
Zigga Zig, yeah.
That zig zig zag, ziggy zigga zag. I don't know how it goes. Spice Girls.
This no, it's zigga zigga zigga. What does zigga say? Ah, if you want my future, forget my past.
You know
I've seen them live twice. There we go. okay. But right, okay, so we've got Afro Man.
Afro Man.
Do you remember the song?
Oh, yeah. When I Got High.
Yeah, because I got high. I was going to clean up my room, but then I got high. I was going to clean up my room, but then I got high.
Oh, I like that one.
It's such a good song.
I lost my cat in the house because I was high. You know, like it's...
Yeah.
I should have finished high school, but then I got high.
Because I got high.
I love Afro Man.
What a tune. Right, then if we're going to go back a little bit further, Too Sexy by Right Said Fred.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I am too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my...
Too sexy for my yurt.
I couldn't go. I know we did the 1950s last week.
Yeah.
But we didn't talk about Chuck Berry and My Ding-a-ling.
My Ding-a-ling.
Big tune.
Big tune. Big Ding-a-ling.
Well,
or Frank Zappa's Catholic Girls or Valley Girl.
Ooh.
Catholic Girls. That's a good one. Frank Zappa is a good one.
I think we might have played a clip of that.
Did we?
I think we may have done. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's because Warren Cuccarello's in it.
Yes. Yeah. There we go.
My Warren Cuccarello story.
Yes, that's your famous. That is the story. I'm going to go with also A Boy Named Sue, Johnny Cash.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's such a good song. Yeah. Now, these two.
How about this one? The Time Warp. Richard O'Brien.
As in, let's do the time warp again.
Let's do the time warp again. You could argue that's not a comedy song, but I'd say that fits into novelty comedy song.
Oh, it's definitely novelty. Yeah. I don't know why it's played at Halloween.
It's a jump to the...
It is what it is. Okay, and then there's these two absolute stonkers, which are definitely still comedy songs in my mind. There's Rick Rock and Shaggy, who did It Wasn't Me.
Well, right.
Right, as in, It Wasn't Me. Caught you jigging on the sofa.
Yeah,
it wasn't me.
That's not a comedy song.
It is a comedy song.
Why? The girl catches him banging someone on the sofa.
Yeah, but have a look at the lyrics. It talks about how he's made a massive mistake about giving her a key. It is quite funny. Genuinely, it's quite funny. All right, This one you will definitely agree with me on. Okay, Stacey's Mum, Fountains of Wayne. Yes. Stacey's mom has got it going on. No?
Yeah.
I think it's a funny song. Do you not think it's funny?
Stacey's mom's a pedophile.
No.
One of the ones I really liked, I remember, is by Groucho Marx. And it's Lydia the Tattooed Lady.
I've never heard this.
You've never heard Lydia the Tattooed Lady?
Never.
But let me read you some. It's about a tattooed lady.
Okay. I gathered that from the title of the song.
She can give you a view of the world in tattoo if you step up and tell her where. For a dime, you can see Kankakee or Paris or Washington crossing the Delaware. When her muscles start relaxing, up the hill comes Andrew Jackson, Lydia O'Lydia, that encyclopedia, O'Lydia the champ of them all. For two bits, she will do a Marzuki in jazz with a view of Niagara that no artist has. On a clear day, you can see Alcatraz. You can learn a lot from Lydia. Come along and see Buffalo Bill with his lasso, just a classic little Mendel Picasso. Here is Captain Spaulding exploring the Amazon and Godiva with her pajamas on. It's just brilliant.
It's really clever.
It's really, really clever.
Lydia, oh Lydia, say, have you met Lydia? Lydia the tattooed lady. She has eyes that folks adore so, and a torso even more so. Lydia, oh Lydia, that encyclopedia. Oh Lydia, the queen of tattoo. On her back is the Battle of Waterloo. Beside it, the wreck of the Hesperus too. And proudly above waves the red, white, and blue. You can learn a lot from Lydia. When a robe is unfurled, she will show you the world.
I am more than likely going to screw this up.
That's the best introduction to a song.
Good morning, how are you? Shut up. Don't give me the small talk, give me the big talk. A million and six. Oh, I love that big talk. Give me some more. Elephants, elephants. Oh, I love that big talk. Give me some more. No, I hate to talk the big talk. I love to talk the small talk. All right, go ahead. Flies, mice, and spiders, mice, flighters, and spice. Spice, mice, and flighters, mice, spiders, and flies. Are you finished with your small talk? Yes. Goodbye. Good morning, how are you? Shut up. Don't give me the big talk, give me the small talk. A millionth, millionth of six. Oh, I love that small talk. Give me some more. Microscopes, microscopes. Oh, I love that small talk. Give me some more. No, I hate to talk the small talk. I love to talk the big talk. All right, go ahead. Cows, yaks, and mammals, max, yamels, and cows. Yaks, cows, and camels, cacks, mammals, and cows. Are you finished with your big talk? Yes. Hello. Well, that was Ivor Cutler's Good Morning, How Are You? Shut Up. Which just amuses me. I kind of screwed the lyrics up a little bit, I think, because it's got cows, yaks, and mammals, max, yamels, and cows, yaks, yows, camels, camels, cacks, mammals, and cows, which is really a tongue twister.
It's quite difficult. Yeah.
I'm finished with my big talk, though. What have you got for us,
Ed? I'm going to go for some bigger talk. I'm going to go with some Cole Porter.
Ooh.
Now, I've already promised this, so I'm going to do Let's Do It. Let's Fall in Love. Birds do it, bees do it, even educated fleas do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Him, Spain, the best upper sets, do it. Lithuanian, and let's do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. The Dutch in old Amsterdam do it, not to mention the Finns. Folks in Siam do it, think of Siamese twins. Some Argentines without means do it. Some people say even Boston beans do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Yeah, a little bit of Cole Porter.
As we've said, we've had comedy song contest submissions coming in from all over the world, and this next one is one of my favorite that we've ever had. Simon and Aaron are a duo called Plastic Jesus, and this is their song,
Eve for Effort.
Probably not welcome there again. I made a hell of a mess I should hang my head in shame. Every glass is a shot glass. You just got to be prepared to put the effort in. And every computer is a laptop computer. You just got to be prepared to put the effort in. Not every gun is a tattoo gun.
It still looks like your mother.
And it seems to me I'm probably not welcome there again. I made a hell of a mess, and the manageress said I should hang my head in shame. Has a satisfactory ending.
Do you write comedy songs? If you do, then you should send them in for our comedy song competition for your chance to win £200 or a £50 runner-up prize. It's so exciting, so send in your comedy songs to songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com. Get them in now. It's time for the nativity.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God, it's correct in the nativity.
It is very, very correct, yeah.
If you've been following the program, you've been following the podcast, you know that David and I are improvising a nativity. Normally, we use a dictionary, but we didn't have a dictionary in the studio, so I dug out Dave's Piano Servicing, Tuning, and Rebuilding for the Professional Student Hobbyist, which is just a book.
It's a massive, massive book.
I was going to open the book.
Tom Cruise could stand on
that. Put my finger down and pick the first word, and it is loosen.
Loosen.
Well, it was between loosen the screw. I've chosen loosen. Because okay. If we're talking about the nativity, screw. Well, actually, screw. Let's do screw.
Okay.
Right,
what's happened so far? Where are we up to?
So far, God has impregnated Mary with his glue. Mary has gone to Zach and Zachariah and Elizabeth to explain to them that she didn't have a baby. They named the baby Jesus. And in this scene, an angel of God visits Joseph.
Okay.
A little uncomfortable.
Hey Joe, where you going with that lithe in your hand? You look like a carpenter, you walk like a man. Hey Joe, yeah, you over here, just above your head, in the middle of your shed. It's me, the Gabriel, the angel Gabriel. I got some good news, I got some bad news. It's up to you which is which, it's up to you to choose. God got loose, he loosened the screw and he... The doody doo doo. Oh, what did he do? The doody doo doo. Oh, God did a doo doo. A doody doo. You know your girlfriend Mary. I'm gonna tell you something scary. God did something, Larry. And he got her pregnant with his child. When you got, you can do what you want. You can do what you want.
Now listen, Gabriel. I don't know you from Adam. I didn't know Adam. That was one of my great, 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 great parents. But I do know who God is. If you're telling me what I think you're telling me, my girlfriend, who's a virgin, I might add, honestly, no, look at me, look at me. Do I look like that kind of guy? I'm not that kind of guy. I wouldn't do that. But if that's what's happening over here, then I guess I'm going to have to explain to people that it wasn't me. So what am I supposed to do?
Oh, hey, Joe, I'll tell you what to do. You just tell everybody what you did do. You did nothing wrong. You sang a song and that's all. Tell them that God did it. God did it. Yeah, he did it. Yeah, he did it. I said he did it, dibby-dabby-dabby-doo. And now Mary's pregnant with God's child, too. God's child, too.
Well, it's been fun talking about lyrics and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, I like lyrics.
Our guest this week is, I think, like a fantastically surreal lyricist.
He definitely is that, yes.
Yeah, and he was great. And we actually did this interview in person at my home at the
Chateau
Del Casa Del Phil Del Delve into the interview with Pat Cahill.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The guest on today's show. And if you don't, that's your own fault. But you'll know them soon.
You boy, you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize.
So.
And this week their name is
Insert Name Here.
It's Pat Cahill, everybody.
Morning,
everybody. I can't believe. God. It's Pat Cahill, everybody. I've got a frog in my throat.
Cahill.
Cahill. Pat, that's Pat Caveman. It's Pat Caveman. That was your first. That was your first.
That was my best
character.
Pat Caveman. Yeah. Back in the early noughties.
Okay. It's Pat Cahill.
Thanks for having us.
We all know Pat Cahill. We don't. You might know him. I know him. That's why he's here. He's sitting right here, David. That's Pat Cahill.
Hi, Pat Cahill. Hi, it's nice to meet you.
That's the warmest, that's the best introduction I've ever had.
Well, there we go.
The gruffest man in the UK shouting, Pat Cahill.
Pat Cahill. Oh, we've edited that bit out, so I'm not going to know what you're talking about now.
Well, it's lovely to be here. 10 o'clock in the morning, the sun is shining in Crouch End.
It is a sunny shining
it's
in
very
Crouch
sunny,
End,
yeah.
Crouch End Towers. So Pat is a just so we get people in the loop. If you want to Google it, you can follow along. But Pat is a star of stage and screen. He's an award winning comedian. He's a fantastically funny surrealist. But why we have you here today is because we want to talk about specifically about your comedy songs and your connection to music in your comedy, and all about the fun stuff and how and where it all happened. So let's go back to the beginning. You started comedy in what year?
I started it, actually, it must be around 20... I know somebody edited my Wikipedia page because I'd put it later and they edited it so that it was correct. I think it was 2012. They edited it so it said he had his majority of success in 2012. and I think I know the guy who did it. I don't like him, but he's a real stickler for the details.
Right.
And he was... I think I'm pretty sure it's him anyway. I won't name him, but...
I
had the majority of my success in 2012.
But were you successful in 2012?
I did. Yeah, I was a new act then. I'd been going for a while before then. I think I started around sort of 22. Like I did stuff at university.
Right.
If we're going way back to like first performances, I used to do a character called the Puppet Man, Dave and Jeff, it was actually the name of the act, right. And it was based on a street performer in Norwich, okay. where I went to university, who was called David Parry, and he was, bless him, he had a hard life. He had two sock puppets that were on about 3-inch strings, so they weren't really puppets, they were socks stuffed with whatever, I don't know what they were stuffed with. And he used to dance and sing really badly to Elvis on the high street in Norwich.
Right.
Obviously, many, many problems in his life and struggled throughout it. But I thought I was young and cruel, and so I thought I'd just do him as an act. So I basically used to mime along to a Daft Punk song with a puppet and me. It was make it better, do it faster, stronger, that one.
Yeah. Uh-huh,
there is a recording of me doing it for my Chortle student competition entry.
Right.
Thankfully, my name's not attached to it. It's called Dave and Jeff, but yeah. You can find it if you look on YouTube. I think they're still up.
Yeah.
And I did the whole song, which is about, you know, sort of 3.5-4 minutes of just miming with a puppet.
Sure.
And apparently, watching it, Ray Peacock was comparing. Apparently, he turned to Steve Bennett about halfway through and went, "He's not going to." And Steve went, "Yeah, he's going to do the whole song." and it would have been fine if I was doing it in Norwich, because everybody got it in Norwich, but yeah. I was doing it in Leeds. And and no one had any context. They just thought I was genuinely insane. Because I had rubber bands on my face as well to make me look like I had wrinkles.
Wrinkles, yeah.
I put makeup on the rubber bands and everything so that people couldn't see them.
See the wrinkles, yeah.
Did it have context because you'd done it in Norwich before?
It had context in Norwich because everybody knew the guy I was taking the
mic. Okay, I see. Yeah,
quite
viciously.
Okay.
Well, you were taking the piss out of him, but it's a tribute of sorts.
It was, yeah. It was. I mean, moderately honourable.
Like, I remember being with Steve Hall from Clang in, we were in Nice doing some French gigs, and there was a guy there that was under a big blanket, and all he had was like a clacker on his hand, and then this music playing, and the clacker, the monster would go. And now Steve Hall thought this was the most amazing. Like we kept going back. Like we were the only people that really found it funny, right? And you thought it's the kind of thing you could do that if you did it on stage to a whole Daft Punk song. It may not translate.
Yeah, it didn't really translate. And but the good thing is, I found out that the guy actually had to move on from Norwich eventually because he was making so much from busking, because he was quite a local hero. I mean, he's really well, the puppet man of Norwich is very well known in Norwich. He was making quite a lot, and they challenged his. He was getting like, you know, I don't know. I'm talking like bin man money. He basically moved out of Norwich because they were pressurising him about his benefits and everything, because he was basically on a relatively good salary from busking.
Yeah, right.
He had the best pitch in town. People were chucking pounds and fivers in all day.
Yeah,
it's probably, you know, I'm thinking 50, 60 grand a year.
Right.
Minimum.
Yeah, and on the door.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably having a council house. Did he move to Liverpool? There's a guy in Liverpool.
He might have done. With those, for all I know.
There's puppets. I'm not
for
joking.
All I know. Oh, he might.
Do you reckon Liverpool, he's still about then?
That'd be amazing. I believe he still is. Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't checked in on him in a while.
I think we need to find this person and we need to maybe get them on the podcast.
Wow. That would be a challenge.
So actually, that's quite interesting because it means the heart of your comedy is cruelty, which is a running theme thematically. I don't mean it's cruel. That sounds cruel in itself. I mean that there's a certain amount of dark, like you certainly challenge an audience.
Well,
challenging.
I never meant to be. Yeah, never intended to start out cruel, but there's another song that I did a long time ago. It was about a dog that was dying, so there is a thread. But
tumor dog.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, which is about an elderly dog that you should have let go many years ago, but you keep going because you love it.
Yeah,
keep it alive.
This dog is not in any immediate pain. This dog is not in any immediate pain. I've said it two times before, and I will say it again. This dog is not in any immediate pain.
But there's kindness in that, isn't there? You know, there's love in keeping an elderly dog alive.
There is. Well, I've always wondered about that, though, because, you know, the dog is the dog in pain. I do think in the song you say
the dog is not in any immediate pain. Yeah.
But you don't know that because you speak to the dog?
Can't
you
talk,
can't
yeah,
tell?
No.
He's got a big tumour.
He's got sad eyes. Yeah, he's definitely in pain.
Dogs always have sad eyes, though. Unless you're
feeding
him.
That's true,
You're only ever happy when you're feeding him.
I've got a little puppy and he's got sad eyes every morning.
Yeah.
But that's because we neglect him.
He also has probably heard the song and thinks, oh, my God, I'm never going to get out of this.
I don't want to get old.
Please don't let me get old. So you did. So that was 2012 when you had the majority of your success.
Unfortunately, true.
It's true for all of us. Mine goes further back than that. So I'm a 2007 success, and then
that's the majority
of my success. So when you were doing, you started off doing. So that was kind of musical.
Yeah, but I mean, you didn't
write the songs for the puppet, Mr. Puppet. What was the character called? The Puppet.
It was called Dave and Jeff. And Jeff was the name of the puppet. But that was a brief-lived thing. You know, that worked at Norwich, and then I dropped it. But that
had music in it. That wasn't your original.
I mean, musically as well. I was in a band called Shooting Craps out in the Fens.
Was the band called Shooting Craps or Shooting Craps Out in the Fens?
It would be better if it was called Shooting Craps Out in the Fens. It's called Shooting Craps.
Out in the Fens.
Okay. I still think we were brilliant. I listened to an old CD recently, and we had a song called Gorilla, which went Gorilla.
Okay, so is Shooting Craps available on Spotify?
No, it's not.
Why isn't it? It
was back in the day where you burnt CDs and gave them out after gigs.
But it doesn't take much to just load it up.
I
think in this day of content, Pat, what you're missing a trick there, because I think you should get everything you've ever done slapped. No, don't laugh. I think you should just slap it onto the...
I genuinely don't know if there's a recording left. I think I have one CD somewhere which skips like nobody's business.
Even better.
I could spend money getting it restored somewhere. But I genuinely don't think the recordings exist anymore. I'm sure my friend Will, who was in the band with us, wiped his... has not got the same Mac that he had back in... God knows when.
Yeah, right. So, but it's got to be, it'll just be floating. Someone will have it. If you put the word out, one of your fans.
Maybe Lewis. So that was pre-comedy, but we did sort of some silly songs, which were half funny.
And you were the drummer in that band?
I was a drummer, yeah.
So what else do you, so you play the drums?
I'm very much a drummer.
Okay, cool.
So when you wrote the songs, Tumor Dog or The Chicken Shop,
they were wrapped along to other songs originally, and then I got a friend to do the music for them in a new style. So my original music making skills are very limited. I rely on other skilled musicians who actually can do it. So I'm not like I can't pick up a guitar or a piano and have a go, but I sort of Lionel Bart it, find something, hum an idea, find something similar, and then say, let's do something like that if something's going to be created from a scratch.
Yeah, so we're gonna come to that, because you in more recent years you use like pre-recorded like music hall tracks and stuff instrumentals, and
anything
you put words on them
and pre-copyright. So
pre-copyright.
Oh, like, that is such a good idea.
Yeah. I'm going to do that with Mozart. Don't think anyone will notice.
the estate won't chase you up.
There actually is on the YouTube libraries. If you go to the YouTube library, there's people donate songs.
Siren they're coming for. The copyright call.
Always twitching.
if you go on YouTube libraries and you've got people that just, I guess they submit and donate instrumental music or, you know, stuff to use on your YouTube clips.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people do that and if they get paid for it. I'm not as sure if you make money putting it. I don't think you do.
Yeah, no, I
think it's free.
Well.
Yeah. But I've used a couple of those. But I've always thought that'd be a really interesting thing to do, to start writing lyrics to those songs. And I guess I don't know what would happen if you actually released them. I don't think they could do anything about it, could they?
I don't think
so. Let's test it.
Yeah, let's really push the boundaries of stealing music.
Yeah, exactly. But then if they do catch for stealing, we can donate all the money to charity and say we're doing it for Africa, assholes.
That's not how it works. They will just take the money.
Oh, sorry, David. Sorry, my lawyer, David, here.
Sorry, I'm being a musician, it's quite nice when you get paid for things.
But don't you understand what I said, David? They donate the song to YouTube. Have you been on YouTube Library? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You'd actually be pretty good putting stuff on that. You could just.
I know, but I have other library tracks that I just sell because it makes me more money than if I put it onto a YouTube library. But you will get so if that ad or if that thing that it's put onto is monetized, then you will get a percentage of the money on that. I'm sure that's how it works.
Well, our listeners are learning a lot today.
There we go.
How to monetize
their clips.
But actually, if you guys want to send in a couple of, don't laugh, send in a couple of tracks for Pat.
yeah.
Yeah, just
send
in a couple of instrumental tracks, whatever they are. We're giving to Pat. Pat will go away, and then maybe at the end of the series, we'll come back with one of Pat's.
All be done for charity. Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll do it charity.
We'll
give the money to tumor dogs.
Yeah,
dogs with tumors.
Perfect. Because I had to set up a small charity on.
Well, you should have because after
of doing
you made a lot of work,
for,
you made a lot of money off.
Yeah,
them.
I did.
At least you can do is give back.
Poor old dogs. But it is the reason that I never entered the musical comedy awards or anything like that because I'm not technically a musical comedian. I mean, I am because I do music and as I perform and
you're on Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Yes,
mate.
This is
confirmation. Other than 2012, this is now a peak.
It's good. No, it's good. This is the next wave.
it is.
I've always considered I need some way of starting and closing a set. So that belittles musical comedy in general. What? But
I don't think it does because it's something different. That's like if you're a musical comedian and you're using it to really elevate your set for certain reasons, then it's slightly different to what you've just said, which is that you use it as a closer and as an opener. I think that's fair enough. You're using it in a way that works for you.
I just my reasoning is it worked for Morecambe and Wise. You know, they didn't sit down at the piano and write it, did they? They just did songs because it was entertaining. So that was kind of that's how I, you know, artistically justify it in my own head.
Yeah,
it's another, and I think I would prefer it if every comedian did a song at the end, no matter who it is. It's got to be better, hasn't it?
I couldn't agree with you more.
Even if it was shit.
I just remember Mike Gunn, if anyone knows Mike Gunn, he's a brilliant stand-up comic, has been for years. He used to do a character called The Undertaker, and he would end his set with The Undertaker's versions of These Are a Few of My Favourite Things. and it would bring, because he did it quite lugubriously. He's that face that he's got. and it would bring the house down because... There's something that about music that really that brings the audience together. And
I just think there should be a night where everyone's forced to. Like everybody.
It's called Cray Cray Cabaret, and it's at the Comedy Store.
That's right.
that's what we do.
So if you do straight stand-up, you have to.
Yeah, Emmanuel Sanubi, if you know, he's like a large bouncer-size man. He sang The Little Mermaid.
Part of Your World,
brilliant.
Which has got to be one of the top 10 moments of my life. It was so good.
This huge man sing this lovely little song. Shepherd Sandy sang Common People with the lyrics in her hand, brought the house down, standing ovation. The whole crowd
amazing.
Singing every word of the song.
Yeah.
And you do realize that's... I mean, I've said this many times on the podcast, but what Mike Wilmot used to live here, sit in that very chair you're sitting in, and say, "You're taking your cheat stick with you tonight, Nickel."
Well, there's an example of someone who I'd love to see close on my way or something.
Oh yeah,
you know, Mike Wilmot at the end just going, "Oh God, here we go."
Yeah,
just having done it for 10 years, just a sincere song.
That would be really.
He accidentally did one night and it worked, so he just carried on doing it for ages.
I just had this image anyway of Mike suddenly having a really beautiful singing voice.
Yeah, you can imagine it, no?
Well, yeah, you can actually, because I used to go, well, if you're so good, why don't you play the guitar? And you like pick up my guitar and then he'd play it. Oh, he does play guitar. Like most Canadians do, I think. It's something to do when you're smoking pot. He's also went to the Ontario College of Art. People don't know that, but Mike Wilmot, he's actually a trained artist.
Right.
Yeah, I know, right? You wouldn't think that.
But it'd be great. It'd be great. I don't know. Yeah. Other suggestions for Mike to close on.
This is My Life by Dame Shirley Bassey.
Baggy Trousers by Madness.
Madness, yeah.
He talks like that. Hey, Phil, how's it going? He's Canadian. So he'd probably do a really good, like, Tom Waits.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Closing Time. So, anyway.
Closing Time. That's perfect.
So back to Pat Cahill and his experimentation. So you're now on our podcast telling us you're not a musical comedian.
Yeah.
Although you do play drums, you play sometimes with Spencer Jones, who is a musical comedian.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I try and play along with his loop pedal and everything.
It sounds great.
It's very hard because it's
I've seen it a
perfect,
few times.
Perfect rhythm, a loop pedal. It's like it's bang on. So you're playing with a robot,
yeah.
and on an electronic drum kit as well. So
yeah.
You have to be really on time, otherwise it sounds like horses' hooves clumping. And yeah. But we had a great technician when we did it in Edinburgh who would just ride my volume levels. So every time I started slipping out, I'd look really happy because I was playing along, but he was just turning me off.
Yeah.
And then he'd listen, and when I came back in time, he'd turn me back up again. And for a while, I didn't notice, and then I could hear when I dropped out, and I was like, "All right, okay, here we go. Let's listen." And I'd start staring like a maniac at this red dot on his that was flashing on his loop pedal.
And
some people were like, "Were you staring at me?" Because it was in the eye line of some people in the audience, and I freaked out a few people because it looked like I was staring them in the face. But I was just desperately trying to watch this red dot and keep in time.
Yeah.
So not only am I not a musical comedian, I'm not a very good drummer either. my rhythm is terrible. The band we were in, Shooting Craps in the Fens, Shooting Craps Back in the Fens, we used to start all of our songs with a guitar riff because if I ever went 1, 2, 3, 4, I'd be on the wrong rhythm and the song would start like double time, half time.
Yeah.
So we just gave up and it would always start with a guitar bit. And then the guitar counted the drums in because every time we tried it the other way around, we'd be doing a ballad. Scar Speed.
So you're probably the first non-musician, non-musical comedian I know that has taken money off of Channel 4 to make music videos. Well done, Pat. That's the biggest scam of the world.
Where you can't you?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there must be other avenues I can pursue. Silent dance. Anything that I'm not very good at, I might make some money on.
I seem to remember, though, Wayne Shepherd, who's Gary Lestrange, and I don't think he said this to him. I think Nick Doody might have said to me, he's a friend of his, that Wayne doesn't play any instruments. He originally wrote all the stuff on his PlayStation. His PlayStation? That he learned how to write the tracks and arrange the tracks using the sounds on the PlayStation. And then, that, as Gary Lestrange, now, if you've heard that stuff, it's really, really good. I mean, it's amazingly good.
Yeah.
It's like some of the songs are, let's say, like Bowie-esque, but they are that expansive. Some of them are absolutely fantastic. Now he's composed tracks for music for a screen and stuff like that.
However you get around to doing it, if you want to do it, so there's always a way, isn't there?
But that's what I mean. So you wouldn't say he's not a musician, so I wouldn't say that you're not a musician, because you still have to sing. The voice is an instrument.
Yeah, Pat. Well, I think another thing is there's stuff I've done in music that I've thought of routines that I just, because I don't really like the sound of my own voice doing stand-up a lot. So, like, coming up with a routine, I can bore myself silly after doing it a few times or a long time. But the stand-up bit of it, I sometimes think of an idea and I think, oh, God, everybody's going to have bloody done that. But they won't have done a song about it. And so I think, well, and also no one's going to nick that. I can do a relatively straightforward thing in a song, and it doesn't seem as relatively straightforward, but it is. Like, as a bit that's not really a song, it's just about hangovers. It's called Hangover 2017 because that's when I wrote it. I just update the year as it goes on. It's now called Hangover 2022. next year, you work it out. But
give me a minute.
But okay. It's just repeating the phrase, I kept calling. It's about waking up and having the sort of fear of what you'd said the night before. I kept calling him Stefan when his name was Stephen, and it's not a very I genuinely called a bloke Stefan all night at one party, and then woke up shivering because I'd realised his name was Stephen.
Right.
And I thought I can't work it out into a routine that doesn't sound like I've just done a bit of observational comedy that I don't really appreciate. So I whacked some sort of sad backing music on it, and it times in with that.
Yeah.
And then it feels like it's something different and odd and strange, but actually it's just a very straightforward routine.
Yes.
That gets sort of expansive from the music. So, again, that's another reason why I use it. It's a way of doing stuff that I can't quite say.
No, that's something that Nick Helm said in the very first episode of this podcast. He'd put things in buckets, so he'd have ideas. I don't think he technically had buckets, but he put things. So he'd go, that's a funny idea, but this doesn't really work as stand-up. And then at some point he'd go, oh, actually that works as a song, or you get I get a title for a song. You go, oh, I can't really think of the song, and then he realizes, oh, it just works as the title of the song. It's just a funny thing to say.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it during something, and then it gets a laugh. I'm going to try and convince you are a musical comedian by the end of this.
I'm getting there.
You're getting there. Because, I mean, you're in the rap, in the chicken shop rap. And if you haven't heard it, don't go and Google it now because you're in the middle of our podcast. But Google it at the end. And you do, that's pretty rap. That's pretty, it's not the easiest rap.
No. I've always liked writing lyrics and there's something nice about writing rhymes that don't necessarily it's nice to find a lyric or a rhyme that isn't I really do sit down and write lyrics for a long time and try and make it surprising and not like a rhyme just for the sake of a rhyme when you've got I'm trying to think of an example, but I really enjoy that because that's the closest thing to sort of like jigsaw puzzling actual work that you can sort of, you know, it's logical and you can come back to a song as well, like if you haven't finished it. It's quite nice as a practice to do rather than, you know, sort of stand up is much more you have to, you know, you come up with an idea, you try it on stage, see if it works or not, live or die, and then you come back to it, refine it, whereas a song you can sit down and from start to finish get something that you can be pretty confident will be good by the time you're actually performing it. And that's you don't get that with stand-up, so it's really nice that you come up with a sort of finished product basically and go, I really like that. And I think it's also a song, so you know it's going to entertain in its own respect because it's a bit of music, people like it, and if you're excited to do it, it's really lovely. And it feels like an achievement to have learnt a song as well.
Songs are really lovely sets. They're set pieces. I think this is why it bothers the comedy purists. I think all the people we've been mentioning, though, and including Morecambe and Wise, all people that do a little bit of music in their stuff, somehow it elevates the show. I love the idea of the purist comedy. I was just being someone that just does stands and talks. It's not something I could do. But that idea of having a set piece means you've put some thought into it. And I think the audience recognize that. I think audiences, my theory is that everyone thinks that they're funny. Everyone has been funny at some point in front of someone. Therefore, you being funny in front of them isn't actually that can really odd. But not everyone can play the drums or the guitar or sing a song to a backing track. So they immediately go, oh, this is actually a talent that I don't share.
There's the light entertainment element of it, but there's the just general show business.
The razzmatazz.
It's great, isn't it? Nothing better, is there?
razzmatazz of your coconut.
It's so good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's got the razzmatazz.
It's got the razzmatazz, yeah. I've always said that about you. Pat razzmatazz Cahill. Padamatazz.
The process that you just described, though, is exactly the same as if I was going and writing music for something. So the way that you've just said, it's like fitting a jigsaw puzzle together. I very often will get called into a studio and they'll say, we need a new chord progression for this, or we need a new lyric for this. And that's exactly what I get to do. And I know the exact feeling that you're talking about when you actually put those pieces together and it all fits. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing knowing that somebody's going to hear that and it's going to be a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you're still trying to convince me that I'm a musical comedian.
That's exactly what I'm doing now, yeah.
But it's a satisfying moment when you, as a non-musical comedian, sing a song that you've written in front of an audience and it's a success.
Yeah.
I mean, I've written songs that are not work for an audience. Like, I can't do them live, but they are funny if you listen to them on tape somehow.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, there's extra width of with music. You can just also, you don't want, like, if you were doing an album of comedy songs, you want some of them to not be bam 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 bam, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would.
But might not be right at
Comedy albums, actually, now we're talking about comedy song albums, work better when they don't have those short pieces of stand-up-y comedy music, because those become pretty boring pretty quick.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
They're just there for the joke. They're not there for the musicality. I was going to ask you what your influences
That's
are.
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
No, but I was already asking it.
But I also was already asking it.
No, you
it.
Weren't. You
I
just, you just thought of it now, but I was already on. We know who the better interviewer is.
We're very aware of this, right?
What are your...
Like, my influences, shall we?
Yeah.
Harry Hill. Because he always has a little bit of music, and he was one of the first stand-ups I saw live, Cambridge Corn Exchange.
Yeah.
He just has a glorious appreciation of doing a bit of fun music, and there's no real there's no meaning to it. It's just a bit of fun, isn't it? And to the highest extent, it's just a bit of silly fun because it's just doing Morrissey or whatever and having a laugh with it. Loved that.
Yeah.
Presidents of the United States of America.
Yeah.
They're silly songs. That was what I used to. I love that album. The one with
Boll
Weevil and Peaches.
Yeah.
But stand-up-wise, musical comedy-wise, going way back, Spike Milligan and all of that lot. So the Goon Show, and you know, they'd have a jazz band, and they had a harmonica player, wasn't it? What's it called? And they just halfway through the show, oh, by the way, here's some jazz harmonica. Fantastic.
Right. Yeah.
but also, you know, Milligan did songs. Peter Sellers played the drums. It was just in my, like, watching all that growing up, it was watching it like I was in the 50s. but it was like that was what you did. That was what they did. It was like there was no like, oh, you don't even need to think about it. It's like, if you can, of course you're going to.
Yeah.
I saw Brucey and Roy Castle, I think it was, doing a routine the other day. Was it Roy Castle or was it? It could have been. Anyway, it was on live at the Palladium back in the day, and I still can't really stand Bruce Forsyth. It was awful, but he could dance and he could sort of sing and he did it all and. Yeah. Not very well, but quite well. I mean, better than I would be able to tap dance.
Do you tap dance?
No.
You paused for quite a long time.
So would
you
better?
Have you
tapped dance?
I don't. I haven't tapped dance. No.
Tony Law and I once went to Pineapple Studios to took some tap lessons.
Amazing.
Because we were we've got a dance duo called Night Danger, and we were going to don't laugh. And we were going to it wasn't a comedy thing. Okay, guys. Okay, we'll just move on. It wasn't a comedy thing anyway. Tony Law and I were learning to tap dance because Night Danger were going to tap the end of war. And you guys can laugh, but we didn't complete the course. And now the Ukraine. But anyway, move on, guys. You guys are assholes.
I did jazz ballet lessons when I was about 6 or 7 with my mate Joe at the Islam Village Hall dancing school. But we didn't last long. His mother was the dance instructor, and we basically got asked to leave because I spent the whole of one session on the floor on my, like, sort of with my legs splayed, pulling myself around, making Joseph laugh saying the phrase, I can go here if I like. I can go here if I like. I can go here if I like. And we didn't do any dancing.
Yeah.
And then we asked if we could learn the moonwalk, and she said no, and so we left. But yeah, other influences.
What about real, like, musical influences? Because I think that does have some effect. Even you said presidents of the United States of America. Just out of curiosity, what bands do you listen to? What's the last album you bought?
The last album I bought was the latest one by The Darkness. They were a massive, massive influence. They still are probably my favourite band.
Right, because you're up in Norwich when they would have been big in Lowestoft. They're from Lowestoft. They're
local lads.
Yeah.
I remember seeing them on the train coming from... coming into London from Norwich and just like packing it. But
and here's a little comedy trivia note is that Frankie is Phil Kay's cousin.
I know this, and this is one of the most embarrassing but quite fun moments in me being starstruck. So, because Phil did the night The Good Father, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
At the comedy pub.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing Frankie there once or twice and just thinking, God, that guy looks like the guy from The Darkness. But just in my head, because I love The Darkness so much.
Yeah.
Just never went, but it is. I was just like, oh, he's just got such a look like the guy.
Yeah, right.
And then I'd sort of seen him at the back occasionally, and then he'd gone. He just popped in to see a few bits, and then he'd gone. Like, maybe, because I did it maybe, I don't know, maybe three or four times in the time it was there. I don't know if it's still going. But... but then one night we went out afterwards for drinks, and he came with. And we're in a loud bar afterwards, and I was just like, "So what do you do then?" And he went, "Oh, I'm in a band." I went, "Oh, really? Oh, that's cool. Which one?" And he went, "You might have heard of it. It's The Darkness." And I was like, "Oh," and I just basically imploded because I was like, "I don't really know how to say this because it's going to come across like I'm lying." But I thought you were, but then I thought you can't be, and then I thought you wouldn't, like, if you weren't, then you wouldn't want me to say what I'm about to say, which is that I'm such a massive fan. And I think what he said was, "Well, you seem like a genuine man, and I like you, so don't worry about it." Or something along those lines. It was really sweet. It was really hard to phrase because by that point I'd been hanging out with him for like 2 hours.
Yeah,
and that's the point when I realised that the guy who is the guy from The Darkness is the guy from The Darkness, and I'd already thought he was the guy from The Darkness, but then convinced myself he wasn't. But they're amazing. They're amazing. Them and Slade. They're musicians who are so talented. They did silly stuff because they could see through the pomposity of music and that music industry. And then in so doing, like, idiots have thought they were novelty, whereas actually when you look at the quality of the music, it's just fantastic.
Yes.
I love Justin Hawkins' new YouTube life.
Yeah, his TikTok stuff.
And when you watch the quality of the analysis and how smart he is and how funny he is, you know, there's a guy who could have just... He could have been a stand-up quite easily.
Yeah.
He could do it tomorrow.
Yeah. He's also a genuine... But he comes across as being really genuine, and he's not... It's a really tricky thing he's doing, because he's never really critical. He picks things that he likes. I mean, and if he does have something to say, I really like the way he takes the songs apart. I think I saw when he did a book, Coldplay, you know, which you wouldn't think that Darkness and Coldplay are the two worlds apart.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was going, no, and he goes into it, because you really got to appreciate this for what it is.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And it makes you kind of appreciate Coldplay in an odd way. But I guess he's talking about it from a pop sensibility of writing. I mean, they wrote some of the biggest songs of that era.
Yeah.
I recently did quite a deep dive into The Darkness, and I don't know why, but I went, I'm going to download the whole back catalogue and listen all the way through. And there are some absolute bangers. It made me think their back catalogue is almost as big as Queen.
Yeah. Right?
It's
huge.
Yeah. And there are a few songs in there that never, I just don't think, saw the light of day properly.
Yeah.
And if they had, then maybe they'd be, you know, maybe not quite as big as Queen, but they would have been right up there as one of the best bands, like, ever. Like, there was so much depth to what they were writing.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I think they are, aren't they?
What, one of the biggest bands ever?
Well, I mean, when you see them on a festival lineup, they're usually, like, closing or next second to closing unless, you know, next if it's the Foo Fighters, the Darkness will be. I mean, they're up. They're
yeah,
not.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, I'm not.
I mean, it's hard to be the Foo Fighters, but
yeah, not to say that they are that maligned at all. Like
I went to Lowestoft. I went to the gig in Lowestoft, and I was told going there. I said, "You're going to Lowestoft. Everyone's going to tell you about the Darkness." And I went, "Yeah, okay." And I, on the train, on the way there, the guy sitting across from me went, "Oh, you're going to Lowestoft? Yeah, you know the Darkness from when I was home. It's already started." I even got off the train. I was walking to the taxi. I'm not making this up. To the taxi rank, and I went, "Oh, do you know where the taxi rank is?" "Yeah, it's just over there." "Do you know where the Darkness come from?" So I was like, everyone got in the taxi. We're driving. They're going. Going to the hotel. You've been a little stop before. This is where the Darkness are from. And then it got to the it's every single person checking in and goes, "This is where the Darkness."
Yeah, it's just like, it's
that's
how they say
all lower stuff.
They don't say alone is lower stuff. They go, "Darkness."
Darkness.
Darkness.
it's amazing. And the cab driver was like showing me places where they played there. They did this. I was like, there's got to be more to life than Darkness. But not for you. Okay, obviously we've come out of this horrible 2 years of not doing anything, or not being able to do anything and perform live. How did you deal with that? Did you deal well with that? Did it make you more creative, or did you write more?
I was
stuff?
Very uncreative. I think without the impetus to, I didn't do any online stuff. I just. For some reason, I don't know, mentally didn't get round to it.
Yeah.
So I was very, very uncreative. It was interesting coming back. It was fascinating to watch other stand-ups. And it was nice to be in the same ballpark as everybody else. Like, you know, everybody was starting afresh again in terms of just not being on stage for that long period of time. I've met other stand-ups who never wrote anything down were suddenly like, "Oh, God, I had to find a video from, like, 8 years ago of my 20-minute set and watch that back to be able to perform." I would have hoped that to have come back after a big break with loads of material and loads of, but I had nothing. I had a bit, you know, a modicum of bits about COVID, just to kind of not be like some weirdo who just burst out of a cave and was going, "Hey, it's 2019.
It never happened.
Yeah. Isn't it funny when you're dancing in the nightclub? I don't know why I'm northern, So what I did instead was I got all my bits for the first I tried doing the 20 minutes I did before, you know, I died inside. So I got all my songs and little bits and stings of little musical sounds and stuff that I have in the set and any stand up that I wanted to get in there. And I basically put them on shuffle and I had one cue. So I remember doing a 15 minute, then a 20 minute set. And I didn't know where any of the songs were coming in. And it just meant that I'd be halfway through a story that I hadn't quite worked out. And it didn't really matter whether it was working as a story or not, a bit of stand-up, because it would just go... and a song would start. And it made the whole thing feel like spontaneous and fun. It was really hard work. And I didn't do it long enough to get to the point whereby I knew when the tracks were coming in. And so it was always just kind of awkward but kind of fun, because it meant that I was feeling spontaneous even though I wasn't. So that was a nice trick.
You take a 20-minute piece of tape and you just put...
So like 20 minutes of silence, just randomly scattered songs.
And did you change them each time, or you just do it once? You did it once and then...
I did it. I think I had three versions.
Right.
I cycled through them a bit and then wrote some more stuff and got back into it. But
technically you could have had a technician just queuing them up.
Well, that's what, yeah,
queuing and them off, I think, and then making it really random.
If I carried on doing it, I'd have to do that, because you get to the point where you're going, "Oh, what's this bit?" But you know that 7 minutes 38 in, there's this honk honk noise, and it's not a surprise anymore.
Exactly. And I guess you also don't want the technician to know you're set too well, because then he'll start picking the places.
Well, I thought, give buttons to the audience. You just give give your cue buttons to someone in the audience to say whenever you like. But then
they can screw
with you. Depends how drunk they are.
Exactly.
Isn't it, really?
You get someone who just presses the same thing nine times
over and over,
and just ruins your soul.
that's fascinating to think that you can do a set like that is completely like, because it's not quite improvised, but it's not knowing where things are going to come in your act is such a risk.
I mean, you can and you can't do that, but like, if you want to keep it spontaneous, which, as you're saying, like, but it was just a mental trick I played on myself to make think, remind me what live performance is, that things can go weird. Or and when it worked, it was great. Like, it was like, for me, and for, I think saying this for that audience, the night where it really worked, even though it was mad, and you know, anyone else would say that was not a successful set, but for me and the audience, I think it was like a big fart of relief of, oh right, anything can go wrong, it doesn't really matter.
Yes.
It's live. That's what it should be like. For
yes.
me, I was like, oh yeah, that's nice, that's really nice.
That's the why people like live performance, when the thing that makes it more exciting. It's great to watch someone doing something really slick. That's wonderful. But it's when something goes wrong, watching the performer adapt is actually what makes the live.
Yeah,
thing,
yeah, yeah.
Which and is I, why I often push people over.
I was struggling.
I just go to the National Theatre and just jump on stage and shove someone over, because I think, well, let's just see what they'll do. It sort of brings theatre alive.
I heard a story about who's it? It was I think I said this on stage once at a venue that wouldn't have understood it, but it was one of the Greek philosophers, a Stoic who lived in a plant pot. What was it? Diogenes, a cynic. He said that the problem with the theatre is that if you take a shit in the he didn't. No, he used to go and take a shit in the aisle.
Yeah,
and as a point, like, everybody would stare at that rather than this very well rehearsed play on stage.
Right,
everyone was way more fascinated by the old bloke taking a poo in the aisle, and that, I think stand up is the old bloke taking a poo in the aisle.
Yeah,
it's much better entertainment because anything can happen.
Yeah,
and you got and the trouble is when you're doing songs and you know them so well that you don't want your set to become. You know, become like a boring RSC play.
But this is why we may not like, as comedy aficionados or as comedy or purveyors, we don't want to watch some slick set that's on at the O2 Arena, because it has to be slick and it has, because people pay a lot of money for it. I'd rather watch you or John Kearns or someone in a 35 seat room. Well, I do often. I don't tell this to John,
you
but
can
I've got.
You probably see his house from here.
Yeah, exactly. I've got cameras set up. Should we put them on?
So you had your kind of experimental time using those songs where you didn't quite know where they were going to fit. But in your hour-long show, how do you then fit the songs in to complement the act?
Well, some of them will be crammed in there, like shoved in like a cat into a box, because it's a routine that it's a bit that you have and you like, and you need to make it fit in the show, and that should never be done probably, but I do it every time. and others will be partly inspired by whatever narrative has developed through the show. I don't ever particularly sit down and think of a theme for my shows. I mean, my shows are rubbish. They're not, but they aren't like, they're not any, like, they're not really good. There's bits in them, like, and there's a good vibe. I never said the word vibe. There's a good atmosphere, and like, you know, there might be a tone, but there's no bloody, there's no work and or quality. No. There's lots of work and some quality. But
you have great costumes.
Yeah, good costumes.
Like a military nice, costume, I remember.
Yeah, that
World
was,
War One.
Yeah, that was a good show. I had a dog costume once. I was painted orange a couple of years back. But yeah, it's not really great. Musical comedy fodder.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing you. Did I not bump into you in the loft bar or something? And you're orange. I was like, all right, Pat, what are you doing? You went, yeah, this is my...
It's my thing.
My thing. And then you were like, I couldn't be bothered taking it off and putting it back on again, so just sort of keep it on. Is that...
I think I did just take it off to a certain extent, but there's some nights I was just too tired to fully hose down in the toilets. So, but everybody kept telling me I looked fantastic because it was a permatan. Like, it was
yeah.
The worst thing was a lot of people thought I was doing a show about Trump. Because he was in power that year, right. I think, and I was orange. But where the songs fit in is they are like, as any, when you're writing a show and you have, I suppose if you don't have songs, you have routines that you know are going to go in there, and you can block them in. So sometimes they'll be like, that's perfect for the start, that's perfect for the end. I like to write something for the beginning every year, and then what I do is I get a really good opening song, and then I'm really pleased with that, and I forget about the rest of them. So the show starts really well, and there's a lot of promise in the audience, and then they slowly get hot and tired. Yeah. And by the end of it, they go, "Oh, well, that wasn't, you know, it hasn't done any harm." and then they go. And as long as they haven't harmed anyone, then that's a successful run for me. Yeah. I harm myself every year, though.
What do you mean?
I've still got orange bits.
Yeah. to this day.
Just with lack of self-care over the month. I was up for a week this year, a week. And like halfway through, I think I was at some bar 4 or 5 in the morning, far too tired. And I stopped being able to speak. No, I mean, I could, but it was like drunk tiredness. I remember just Matt Ewins, who can drink, let me tell you. And for me and him left. And when he tells you it's time to go home.
Right.
But the good thing about, trying to be professional, the good thing about songs in Edinburgh is you can be in an absolute state. And as soon as that did it starts, you go, I know what I'm doing for 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. Put it on, phone it in.
yeah. Just smile bright, dance like a child.
It might be even better when you get to be a really big star and don't even have to lip sync anymore. You just stand there and let someone else sing the song around you. You've got like a choir of people that are dancing and singing.
You can just use the sock puppet again.
Yeah, that's the plan. End up back.
You should bring that back. Ever thought of bringing it back?
I did. I did, but it took a lot of context framing before I went into the song. It takes about 3 minutes of here's what this is about.
Short video.
And then three minutes of diminishing returns as they go, oh, I see what he's doing. And then, oh, no, but he is carrying on with it.
Yeah, but I like those jokes that carry on because then it gets to a point where it does become funny again.
Yeah, but
and then there's an even longer loop the next time. You've got to dig in and make sure that it works.
But I do that too often, so that there's a good 9 minutes of my show where it's like they do that for about 6, and then there's 3 where they're like, oh, he's doing the we're going to laugh again in a minute at how silly he's carrying on. So it has a wave, it has another wave, and then it has like, get to fuck.
Yeah, there's a really long one at the end, but you've got to wait it out. You just have to keep going because you know it pays off. And most people ditch about halfway through, and the audience is like, oh, it was terrible. If you hang on, that's an award-winning show.
But then I hang on again, and then it goes down again.
Yeah. Well, there's that sort of anti-comedy thing of doing, I'm actually going to ditch it at the worst point you could possibly ditch it. But you know you're doing that. So for comedians watching you, you think, oh, it's genius.
But no, I haven't never done that on purpose. I just end up there. I'm not that.
You've done it on purpose. I don't believe
you. You're shining so many lights on how wonderful your next song that you're going to play for us, hopefully, is going to be. Which one
should we do? Because so we've got...
Look, I'm interested in the one that haven't learned it yet.
Yeah, okay.
I'd like to hear that one as well.
It's called Awful Box. I wrote it during lockdown. There was a sale on Awful. Well, I saw a sign for Awful in a really dodgy butcher's in Acton. I thought I'd been seeing this is true, but it's also the intro to the song that I'm going to do it. I thought like HelloFresh. I've never seen an online like offal box, like weekly subscription thing. You get a different type of offal each week sent left outside by the bins too long, whatever, who knows, but, offal box.
We do that one.
Yeah. So I did this in my week at Edinburgh, and I still not learnt it. So it's new. It was sort of rustled together, but it's to the tune of Hucklebuck. You know the Hucklebuck. It's a Chubby Checker song. I think it might have been somebody else originally, like way back in the sort of I think the 50s, 40s, 50s.
Okay.
Anyway, way past copyright, so I'm we're fine with this. But yeah, and I wrote it during lockdown. When I saw a dirty, dirty little butcher's selling offal, and I thought maybe there's a subscription service in offal, like HelloFresh. It's called Awful Box, and it goes something like this. Here's a box you must buy. I sell them from a lay-by. They don't go off till July 2022. Get your offal box, get your offal box. Livers, lungs, hearts, eyes, nipples, knees and cocks. Get your offal box, get your offal box. It's mostly made of cattle with a little built fox. Boil it for a day till the smell goes away. That's what you get when you get an offal box. The smell doesn't actually go away. It just moves from the meat into your curtains. Any of your home furnishings will need to be bleached and maybe burnt afterwards. Either way, it's worth a try, isn't it? $9.99 a day. Get your offal box. Here we go, second verse, much the same. It may contain a seagull. I'm told it's fully legal. Only trace amounts are fecal. Here we go. Get your offal box. Get your offal box. Head, shoulders, knees and toes, nipples, eyes and cocks. Get your offal box, hey. Get your offal box, hey. All the finest giblets from a donkey to an ox. It's the only way to eat pre-macerated meat. That's what you get when you're getting offal box. It's been in the sun for a while. It basically come from a skip, and the skip, you know that heat wave? So it's half cooked is what I'm trying to say. 45 degrees on a warm day in the sun, that'll do that for you. So you'll be lucky, you get some cold bits, you get some warm bits, but that's what you get. That's what you get when you get your offal box. Get your offal box, hey. Get your offal box. Hey. You won't find it in Tesco's because I'm not allowed in shops. And get your offal box, hey. Get your offal box. Hey. It cured my mother's COVID, but it gave her monkey pox. It may contain nuts, and it does contain cocks, but that's what you get when you get your offal box. The way I decided to finish that.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Awful Box by Pat Cahill. Thanks for joining us on Songs Like He Left.
Absolute treat. Thanks for having me. Frankie Poulain will tell you I'm a genuine man, but one of the influences I forgot to say earlier, which I should have done, is Corky and the Juice Business and Phil Nichol. You and Mike Wilmot are two of my favourite comedians in the world ever. I put White Mike in there as well, just to make you feel less on the spot. Genuinely, binged your stuff for years, and Phil was one of the guys who kept me going through the V Festival when I was dying on my hole with a tin hat on, hitting it with a spoon. And silence, basically. They're all waiting for Adam Hills to come in. And from the back, I just heard, "Go, Pat!" And that was Phil. So influence-wise, that probably kept my career going at that point because I was ready to shoot myself in the face.
I remember that so clearly. V Fest is like a drum and bass festival. People don't know. And what the hell we were doing there, I do not know. Was it Adam Hills with the headliner? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it filled out for him, Pat. And then I just went on for half an hour, and it's the worst. But but yeah, well, Corky and the Juice Pigs and yourself. And
you can get the Corky and the Juice Pigs stuff. I don't think we've ever said it. I've got on my website, philnichol.com, if you click on the little pig's nose, it takes you to a sub-site of Corky and the Juice Pigs, and we've got all of the stuff we've recorded officially. Is there, so you can stream it for free. So anyone listening and you want to check that out, go and check that out. Thanks, Pat.
No, my pleasure.
Thanks, Pat.
My pleasure. It's a delight. Thanks for having us.
Cheers.
Goodbye, adios, farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're going to have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye. Goodbye!
Well, that was a lot of fun talking to Pat Cahill. What a nice guy.
He's
what
a funny, such a nice man.
And funny. Funny, 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 funny. It was nice to have people around Del Casa del Sol del
Chateau
du Phil. nice to be doing interviews in person.
It is?
Yeah. If you'd like to see more or hear more from Pat Cahill, why not visit Pat on his Twitter, @PatCanBeFound, or his Instagram, @PatCanBeFound.
can be found.
If you'd like to support this podcast, then please join us on patreon.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh, where you can get these episodes 1 week earlier than everybody else.
And all sorts of great Patreon stuff. Or visit us on ko-fi.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh and just buy Dave and I a coffee. We'd love that.
We would. See you next week.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.